Greater Sandton and beyond. Get ready for the Sandton Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
Daar is ons weer. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond, welcome to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all leading digital audio channels. I'm Alexander Leibner and this is edition 153. It's week 16 of 2024 and it's so good to have all five of you listening back again. If you would like to get in touch, you can send through your questions, your comments, or your feedback, and you can do so by using the email address, editor@sandtontimes.co.za. You can connect on social media at Sandton Times and visit the website, www.sandtontimes.co.za. And if you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not at any later stage, well, you can use the WhatsApp line right now in the next hour, 084-822-0938, 084-822-0938. And we'll be standing by to getting your messages and your texts. A special welcome to everyone listening, especially if you're new. If you've just joined the Sandton Times Hour, well, welcome to you. Don't know how you stumbled across the show, or if you've found it somehow, well, welcome. And if you're a regular listener, well, it's good to have you back. We'll be getting a bigger group. I think last week we were 10 or 5. This week we're 7. Always good. Good to get more and more people joining us on a weekly basis. Vincenzo's behind the mixing desk again. Vincenzo, good to have you back. Did you have a lekker week? Yeah, good. Me too. Good. Right. What are we doing this week? Vincenzo, let me just quickly get my papers here. Hold on. Okay, cool. Right. Coming up in the next hour. So disorganized. Shuyi rejoins me again from last week to conclude our discussion around the street vendors and those trading on the sidewalks and traffic lights at Greater Sandton. If you didn't hear last week's interview, well, get onto the podcast platforms, get last week's episode, and have a listen to that. Because if last week's discussion is anything to go by, well, stay tuned for this hour. Then, a major polo tournament is returning to Sandton, and I'll be finding out all the ins and outs of the game and why you need to dress up. Have you seen, Vincenzo? People always go all out. They wear hats. And they were their finest when they go to the polo. Not so with many other things. Funny enough, the theater. People don't dress up for the theater. But for the polo. Oh, you won't believe it. And finally, he's walked away with the glorious title of Marketer of the Year. And I'll be chatting to him about what makes good marketing. So if you're in marketing, if you run a business, small, medium, whatever it is, you need some marketing tips, stick around. By the end of this hour, you'll know more. But first, time for a bit of music as we kick things off to get things going for another week. It's Daft Punk and Pharrell Williams with Get Lucky. You're switched on to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Promote your brand. Advertise your business.
Our audience could be your next client. Contact the Sandton Times today.
It's a good question because lots of people have asked us that, you know, what are you going to do going forward?
That's a great question.
Two critically important questions.
Such a great and interesting question.
I have not even thought about that until you've just said it.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. And we get another show going for another week and another hour. And last week, I was in conversation with Johannesburg Ward Councillor Linda Shackelford from Ward 103, which encompasses Sandton CBD, Morningside, River Club, Bryanston East, Parkmore, and a few other areas in Greater Sandton. And we didn't have a chance to touch on another part of our conversation, so I thought, well, let's get her back on this week to finish off those conversations. And Linda, it's good to have you back on the Sandton Times Hour.
Thank you very much for having me back again.
Well, Linda, it's good to have you back. And I must say, it's not often that we have guests back to back. But I thought, well, you know what? We've got this fresh in our minds. We chatted about the street hawkers last week and some of the issues faced with operational concerns and also permit concerns. But there was another concern that you'd flagged with me that we didn't get a chance to chat about. And I thought, well, let's make sure we have that conversation. And this is with regards to the Ballyclare Garden Refuse site, which is in Bryanston. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is opposite the Bryanston Shopping Centre.
Correct.
Fantastic. Okay, so we know exactly where that is. That's also on Winnie Mandela Drive now. And that used to be a site that I remember. I haven't used it much, but you were able to bring sort of your twigs and your leaves and your grass cuttings and sort of dump them there, for lack of a better word. And they would be then collected and used for, I don't know, compost or something.
Yeah, originally, I mean, you and I both grew up in the hood. So I still remember taking the trailer with my dad down there, and all your cuttings, grass, everything you used to take down there. So it was originally just a garden refuge site where anything from your garden that could be composted could be taken there. But with GDAG going forward, they then made it a multi-source dump, which means recycling. You can take your smaller, if you're doing your bath, tiling, you can take that tiny bit of construction. It's for residents in theory, where they can take that tiny bit of tile and construction stuff there. If you've got oil, little tins, but it's really home use, not bigger use. And your normal recycling, paper, packets, bottles, household goods.
Okay.
So that's where it is supposedly now.
All right. So it kind of reminds me a little bit. In Germany, you get these sites. They're called Wertstoffhof, which sounds like a very German word, but they're essentially places where you can take these exact items, you know, sort of half a bicycle, or maybe you've got sort of a door or something that you don't have any use for anymore, and you can then put it into the wood section or the aluminium section or the plastic section, etc., and then it gets sort of disposed accordingly. But this has evolved quite a bit now, because last time I drove past there, there's a whole bunch of people sitting on the side of the road, and they've sort of turned it into sort of a thrift shop, or sort of a secondhand, anything goes sort of item sale.
Yeah, it's become a very big problem, and it's become actually a security risk. What's happened is it's brought in a multitude of people who are now trying to live in the park, illegal dwellers, I call them, where they're living in the park area. And unfortunately, this road, Herbot Road, that runs down there, has an old age home, a school, corporate offices. There's a whole dealership down there, and this is where people live. So what's happening now is residents, and I'm putting a bit of blame on the residents, and it's not just the Sandton residents, people from Ramberg, Midrand, Fourways, everyone are using this dump. And I think they think they're doing a favor by handing over, we call it bulk waste. So this is bookshelves, kayaks, fridges, ironing boards. I mean, I've seen family photos of an entire family on the side of the thing where people are cleaning out their houses and dumping stuff at the dump, all right, which these, if you want to call them entrepreneurs, are grabbing and selling on the street corner. But it goes against all bylaws. First of all, they're within 5 meters of a intersection. They're blocking off pavements. And now what's happening is, which is the most terrifying, is someone can just drive past going to a storage unit, which happened in December. And they ran, I think there were 20 of them, and jumped on her trailer and tried to open her doors at the robot because they thought she was coming down to the dump. And this dump is not there for bulk waste. It's not there to dump your goods from your household. It's a small, miniature, little garden refuge and the simplest of, if I can call it, recycling that's supposed to go there.
Right. So there's a bit of a concern now in terms of supply and demand. On the one hand, people are bringing things there that they feel might help these traders. On the other hand, people are probably also shopping there, which makes it worth the traders while sort of going through these things. And somehow these two worlds have now clashed and are causing a myriad of issues. So where to from here on this?
Well, if I tell you, I've done 5 operations with the whole of the city, from JMPD, City Parks, JRA, everyone stepped up. We clear the dump, we clear it, we tidy it, pick it up, come in. Residents, and I think this is the sad thing, is a lot of the local residents of Bryanston and the stakeholders in Hobart have spent money out of their own pockets to try and fix up the dump. Pick it up have now started what they call a bulk waste collection, where you can phone your local depot. You can actually phone them to come to your house for free and collect your washing machine, that couch you don't want, the kayak you don't want, anything bulk waste, bookshelves. And they'll actually come to your house within a period of 3 days and actually collect it from your house. But I think what's happening is, with the amount of immigration, all of that, people keep everything in their houses, and at the last minute they go, okay, now it's time to dump, and they're leaving, and they just, we can just dump it at that dump because we've seen the people there and they'll look after it. And the problem is within the circle of people, we've had people, it's informants have come to us and told us the people watching cars coming. We've got drugs being sold there. We've got alcohol being sold there. This is a bus stop that kids from Bransenheim, Brenneben go to. We can't have that on the corner. It's become a health and safety issue now. Yeah. The city are stepping up to do the cleaning every time, but then we stop the bulk waste. We put out everything to residents. And within 30 minutes, I'm not lying, they come and they dump more stuff. So it's an ongoing cycle. So it's now going to get to the point where we're going to start charging for illegal dumping.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we need to take a quick break. I'm chatting to Linda Shackelford. She is the ward councillor for Ward 103 in Johannesburg, which is part of, Sandton CBD, Morningside River Club, Bryanston East, Parkmore, and so on, are all part of that ward. We're chatting about the Ballyclare Garden Refuse site, which you might know, which is right there opposite the Bryanston Shopping Centre on Winnie Mandela Drive and Ballyclare. We're going to pick up on this conversation right after this.
Connect with the Sandton Times. Email editor at santontimes.co.za. Online, on air,
anywhere, anytime.
This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. I'm in conversation with Linda Shackelford. She is the ward councillor for Ward 103 in Johannesburg, talking about the Ballyclare Garden Refuse site and some of the concerns that are being raised with regards to the site as people, I suppose, with good intention, dump some of the stuff they don't want anymore. There's been a community that's been built up around this corner where people are now taking these things out of the dumpsters and trying to sell them to earn a living or to make some money. And Linda, you were touching on the fact that you now have some insights into the fact that this is now becoming not only a physical concern with people flowing into the streets and obviously on the traffic lights, but also that there's some sort of bad elements that are starting to creep up in this area.
Yes, you know, there are a lot of, if I can call it, here I am my New York cop, but CIs that come to say to me that there are people who are sitting there watching the traffic, there are people selling drugs, there is alcohol being sold there, and it's a massive concern. And also they've been known to, because there's no power there, they've been known to threaten security guards in the area, trying to get their phones charged, the gentlemen that hawk there. And because that's their goods, they sleep with their goods because it's their money. So it's also now taking over parks, pavements, and all of that to sleep, which is also becoming a problem.
So it sounds like the real solution to this is actually then to, for lack of a better word, cut off the supply of stock to that refuse site by people not leaving their mirrors or bathroom cupboards or you know, waste paper baskets or whatever else that they dumped there at that site.
That is the most important thing. But what's quite scary is, although we've put it in all the community newspapers, it's been on Twitter, it's been everywhere, that Pick It Up have actually stepped up to offer a service to come and collect that. People are still doing it. Mm. There are lots of charity shops, organizations like hospice, all of that, who come and collect and sell these goods to make an income, and that's through a legitimate NGO, MPO.
Yeah.
But residents still keep dumping, which is a problem.
So apart from that solution, is there any other solution to it right now? I mean, have you got any plans in place to try and address this as best possible?
My next step, I've got a meeting with our regional director. It's got to the stage where the lesson is only going to be learned when people start getting fines for illegal dumping. Normally if people dump sand or rubble all over the pavements, they get a fine. I have asked my regional director to see, we just need one or two people who dump goods on the pavement to get a fine. And hopefully that will hit the social media pages, because we know how everyone loves being fined, and it will hit all the I Love Foyers and Bryanstons and hopefully Midrads and Santons. And then maybe people will learn that that's not a place to dump.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm a bit dumbfounded about where to go from here.
But in terms of the actual site itself, to leave your garden refuse and sort of the things that are not necessarily things you would sell, I mean, does that still remain in terms of a site?
The garden refuge and the smaller recycle and everything is there, and it's managed, and they've got security guards. I mean, it's all managed correctly. But it's the fact now that they're stopping people at the gate to say, you can't leave the stuff here. People drive up the road and then dump it on the corner or on the pavement. And that's where the problem is.
For sure, for sure. All right, well, there you have it. Linda Shackelford, she is a ward councillor for Ward 103 in Johannesburg, talking about the Ballyclare Garden Refuge site. If you are somebody who's maybe been using that site to get rid of some unwanted things, try maybe an auction. I know Facebook Marketplace has its own challenges, or maybe use some sort of other method. Maybe go onto Yaga, sell your thrift clothing there. But as Linda has emphasized, it's possibly not a great idea to be doing that on the corner of Ballyclare and Winnie Mandela Drive. And there are some developments happening there in terms of fines. Linda, thank you so much for joining me on the Sand Times Hour and for that follow-up conversation from last week. It's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Sand Times Hour right after this.
Back for more? The Sandton Times Hour continues.
Welcome to the second half of the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. I'm Alexander Leipner, and that was Eight Waters with To the Moon and Back, a reinterpretation of that all-time Savage Garden great. If you caught something intriguing during the show but you missed all the details, well, don't despair and don't delay to hop onto www.santontimes.co.za. And there you will find the show notes for this week, and we put them up every single week, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, but they do eventually get onto the website. And there you can get a detailed breakdown of all the highlights of this week and some further reading and some links. So if there's something that you missed and you weren't quite sure exactly what it was, you can just go there and hopefully and certainly find that information there. And also don't forget, you can connect with the Sandton Times on social media at Sandton Times. And choose your platform and make sure that you're following the Sandton Times on one of those. And you can also obviously engage on those platforms as well. And it's always good to hear from you. As we get into the second half of the Sandton Times Hour this week, I am happy to hear that the Nedbank International Polo returns to the Ananda Club in Sandton on the 11th of May, on a weekend, on a Saturday. So it's just about a month's time. And this year's theme is Couture on the Green. And South Africa will be squaring off against a leading nation in the world of polo, which is Argentina. But here to chat all things polo with me is Guy Slater. He's the president of the South African Polo Association. And Guy, it's good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Well, thank you very much for having me. We really appreciate it.
Guy, an interesting game coming up, and Sandton has a little bit of a equestrian history, and it's great to see that the Ananda Club still remains a very popular and very prominent polo field in South Africa. Can you take us through the basic rules of polo and the objectives for those people who are not familiar with the sport and kind of what equipment gets used?
Polo is probably one of the fastest equestrian sports in the world. It's a very agile game, and it's an exceptionally dangerous game. So it's absolutely imperative that the rules are followed. And basically the way it works is we work with a thing called the line in polo. So you cannot travel at 90 degrees and come and take the ball and go and score a goal. You have to follow the path of the ball. And that's what makes it such a fast, exciting, however dangerous sport if you don't follow the rules, but an incredible sport to watch. If you think about it, there's basically two teams. So in each team, there's four players. So a total of eight players, two umpires, and generally there's 48 horses involved in just one game of polo. Sure. So many horses, and a lot that goes with that, with many grooms, coaches, strategies, etc., etc. So there's a lot to it. You know, it's a lifestyle, not just a sport.
And it sounds like you need quite a unique set of skills for both the riders and the horses to make this all work.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, it's more of a lifestyle that turns into an obsessive sport. And a lot of these guys and, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen who make these top sporting teams, they've grown up on the side of a polo field aspiring to play this game and watched you know, fellow polo players and their parents and various different people playing. And yeah, it's there's a lot to it, you know. Guys that are playing it in the South African polo side, they've basically been there for many years aspiring just to get to that position.
Mm. Now this Nedbank International Polo tournament that you're going to be having on the 11th of May, how does that fit into sort of the overall fixtures? I mean, is there sort of like a schedule or a calendar of polo that builds up to sort of a final of some sort, like we would know from cricket or rugby, or how does that work?
So yes, the South African Polo Association, we have a calendar that is put out with obviously all our events. However, this is the pinnacle of all our events, and we are very proud and honored to be partners with Nedbank. And for that, we are very grateful because it allows us to get the best polo players in our country to play literally against one of the best nations in the world. So this will be an absolute humdinger of a game. We're genuinely going against possibly the best nation in the world. So we're very excited about this event.
Is that what makes this game against Argentina so highly anticipated? Is that Argentina just has this incredible polo culture?
Yes, they do. They have the most 10-goalers. So just to explain to everyone what a 10-goaler is, that is the pinnacle of your polo career. And that's the highest level you can get in your polo career of all time, you know? And they have the most players in the world and the most 10-goal players in the world. So to take on Argentina is incredible. It's basically like being on the Springboks in rugby, except we're now taking on Argentina at polo. So, yeah,
and what
we
is,
have our work cut out for us.
What does the team win that walks away with this? I mean, apart from the prestige of having, you know, possibly beaten Argentina or beaten South Africa, do they walk away with a particular prize or a particular trophy?
Obviously, we have an incredible trophy that is presented at the end of the day, but it's prestige and reputation, and we're fighting for our country here to really push and prove a point, and playing against this incredible nation, it's going to be an exciting weekend, that's for sure, without a doubt.
Now, it seems like a very intensive game to play. I mean, apart from the physical and the logistical issues that you have to deal with, because there's a lot going on, and obviously very demanding in terms of the, you know, on the horses and on the players. But has there been any sort of any technology or innovation in the game over however many hundred years that it's been going for that has really sort of advanced gameplay and made it different?
Look, the digital aspect of all sports has changed tremendously, and specifically in our particular sport, where we have drones which are able to follow the game, we've got playbacks where we're able to see where there were fouls, etc., so that we can get the ultimate result of which team has fouled or which team has played the best play. But yeah, without a doubt, the digital aspect is probably one of the most formidable aspects that changes everything, you know, from the past.
Well, you've mentioned Argentina is a highly sought after a team in terms of polo. How does South Africa rank in sort of the global rankings when it comes to polo?
I would say we're pretty much right up there. We're definitely in the top six. But yes, we'd have to play against Argentina in May just to see where we actually fit in. So this particular event is pretty important to see where we rank in global ratings. All our guys that we have are pretty much the best in the country, and we've selected them accordingly. And time will tell, we'll see. So if there's an event to watch, it's going to be this one. This is going to be the one to watch. Argentina, without a doubt, have the most polo players in the world. And without a doubt, all those polo players play in Argentina, play all over the world. And they're just an incredible polo nation. I mean, they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of horses. And they have what they call the Argentinian Open, which is probably the highest level of polo being able to be played in the world. And we are now inviting that nation to come and play against, you know, our South African polo side, which is going to be, you know, quite a spectacle.
Well, talking about people watching, I mean, it seems interesting how polo always seems to intersect with fashion and it being a very social event, particularly in terms of how people dress and obviously have spectators, and there's always a lot of hospitality around that. Why do you think that is? What sort of attracts people to this game, even though it's probably not as widely known as things like rugby, cricket and soccer?
Yes, I think, you know, it lends itself to having, you know, folk being able to flaunt their stylish outfits and just mix it with the sporting elegance, you know. And it's a day out, which really lends itself to people being able to, you know, show their fashion statements and, express themselves, which is an incredible thing, you know.
Now, in terms of the venue, in terms of the Ananda Club, I mean, I suppose there's a couple of polo fields around South Africa that games are hosted at. What makes Ananda so special in terms of being able to compete on that field?
Well, surprisingly enough, I think Ananda is probably one of the best facilities in the world, not just in South Africa or Africa. And they're continuously building and improving their facility. So, you know, if you went to the event last year and you come to the event this year, you'll see major changes. There's been a lot of improvements, but yes, as far as the facility is concerned, it's world class and one of the best in the world, not just South Africa or Africa.
There you have it, Guy Slater. He's the president of the South African Polo Association and chatting about the Nedbank International Polo, which is taking place at the Ananda Club in the heart of Sandton on Saturday, the 11th of May, 2024. We're going to put all the information up on the Sandton Times, so you can go on to www.sandtontimes.co.za today to find out more. And as I said, the theme for this year is Couture on the Green. So if you are looking to go along, make sure you've got the right color and the right etiquette and everything ready to enjoy what sounds like world-class polo right in our own backyard. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Sandton Times Hour right after this.
The latest news.
The biggest names.
The best destinations.
The hottest entertainment. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms wherever you are in the world. And that was Swedish House Mafia and The Weeknd with Moth to a Flame. Or if you want to translate that into South African terms, I don't know, an individual or a South African attracted to things like Nando's, which brings me to my next topic of discussion as I'm joined by Doug Place, who's the Chief Marketing Officer for Nando's Africa, Middle East and South Asia. He walked away with the Marketer of the Year Award for at the 2024 Marketing Achievement Awards, and he joins me on the line. And Doug, it's so good to chat to you again.
Fantastic. Alex, thank you very much for a very generous introduction. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Doug, let me be the first one let me be the gazillionth person to congratulate you on this award. I'm sure you've been getting quite a few emails, texts, and whatever else one gets these days. Congratulating you on this award.
It feels like a birthday, to be honest. It's lots of emojis in messages.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Lots of gifts. So it's been a really brilliant week, you know, obviously personally, but very definitely for Fernando's as a whole. We collected 3 gold awards at what are the only marketing awards. And maybe we can talk a little about the difference between this award and other award shows in a second, because it's something that we're very passionate about.
Well, listen, I think that's a good starting point. So what is the difference between this and different award ceremonies?
This is the only one that really recognizes the role of the marketing function and the marketer within that. I think, you know, outside of the profession, you know, terms like advertising and marketing are used synonymously. And whilst they're often done by similar people in similar functions, they're quite different disciplines. And, you know, things like the Lurie Awards or the Effies or Ad Focus Awards, you know, rightfully recognize the role of communication and advertising within a broader business context. You know, what the Marketing Achievement Awards set out to do almost a decade ago was to recognize the marketer and the brand and the organization behind that. And there's a lot of really great marketing, and I think the role of these awards and why we're so excited to, you know, to be recognized there, is that there are lots of things that wouldn't win a Lurie, but are examples of world-class and great professional marketing. So, for example, Nando's, this is not well known, almost 40% of my budget is spent internally. So it's not seen by the public. It's both building an internal brand, making sure that the people who work for Nando's, the 14,000-15,000 Nandokas who work for us, are as in love with the brand as we want, you know, the public and the consumers to be. So, you know, things like the internal brand work we do, which was recognized at the Marketing Achievement Awards through work like our Perry Post, for example. We have our own radio station, unlike this one, which is only for staff. You know, so those kinds of things, which, you know, wouldn't necessarily be recognized because they're not consumer facing, are recognized as part of the Marketing Achievement Awards. Things like brand positioning, the hard, sweaty Excel work that most marketers do, but doesn't, you know, often goes unrecognized. But it's important if you're going to, you know, execute your profession well. Can get recognized in a program such as this. So it's a one of a kind, man, and we're delighted to be a part of it.
Well, listen, it's an age-old debate around actual performance, how marketing enables business performance versus it's a great creative idea, but did we sell more chicken?
Yeah, sure.
And I think that's always the big debate a lot of business owners, a lot of boards have about these things, where they said, well, we've won so many awards, but we haven't sold more chips, or we haven't sold more salad. and that's always the question about, is marketing a science or is it an art?
Yeah, well, it's both. You have to do both. You know, it's weird because this is a very particularly South African conversation. I was really lucky enough to study abroad last year, where this conversation doesn't exist at nearly the degree of intensity here. I think part of that's because the South African economy is flat and not growing, and it hasn't for some time, whereas first world markets have grown quite nicely post the 2008 financial crisis. What's, I think, unique about the marketing function is it has one foot in today and one foot in tomorrow. And so you have to understand how businesses work, what the value chain is, how you position and build your business in such a way that it adds value to customers. And if it does, they pay you for it. That's normally how the reciprocity works. And you can take, you know, that brand positioning and build it into the future. And a lot of other business functions, and they're just as important. This isn't, you know, market has been disproportionately important here. You know, they recognize the business of today. So an expense incurred today hits my income statement today. Operators make sure the business works well today. You know, HR and IT are an enabling function to make sure the resources are well organized towards business goals today. There are very few, you know, functions which the sole job is to make sure we have a business tomorrow. And so being able to architect a brand and build products and make sure they're well priced and they, you know, good value to the consumer as well as good value to the company tends to be the domain of the marketer. And there's no business that I know of that exists without customers.
Yeah.
And so this idea that marketing is not that actually that important, or we're not quite sure of its value, it's like, well, how important are customers to you?
Yeah. True. Very true.
So it's funny that we have these kind of defensive conversations in South Africa when, frankly, you know, the opportunity for growth does fall to marketers.
I mean, is it easier or harder to work, you know, to market a brand like Nando's?
It's both, and I know that's a cop out. It's a brand that means a lot to people. It's like if you could get tattoos of consumer brands, Nando's would probably be one of them, and Harley Davidson would be sort of the others, and, you know, Apple and like. So those who love it really love it. They have a real deep affection to it, which is wonderful and hard won by us. The side effect of that is people are disproportionately, you know, emotionally involved when we get things wrong, and we do. We're a business. They're very high expectations on things like advertising, for example. A lot of advertisers are happy to make average commercials because they're not going to get cancelled. They're not going to get in any trouble for it, and they might grow sales a little, but that's fine. Whereas, you know, an average Nando's ad, man, like, you get a pile-on from everybody. Like, every ad agency goes there, yeah, it's good, but, you know, it's not as good as that last Dictator ad. That was the best Nando's ad. Like, you don't say that about, you know, other, you know, unless insurance brands, for example.
Yeah.
So that kind of armchair refereeing can be quite hard on a marketing team, because these are your peers, these are your industry, these are your colleagues. This is the water cooler WhatsApp conversations that take place. So that does make it quite hard. But I don't think that's, you know, I think that's a privilege. And I think that kind of pressure to always do better and to make something that really means a lot to people and to build this brand for those who work for it, own it, as well as, you know, enjoy it is a rare privilege, man. And we're glad to do it. So yeah, it is hard, but it's a good thing, I think.
Well, Douglas, I feel like I need to get you back again. I think there's so many other things we still need to discuss, and I think you can really share some wisdom, especially for some of the people listening who might be working on brands or who run businesses and need some insight into the way you think. But for now, let's bask in the glory of the fact that you've won this fabulous award, Marketer of the Year, and long may it last, well, at least for the next year, and then we'll see what happens after that. But Doug, it's been so good to have you on the Santon Times Hour.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much, Alex, and all the best. I really appreciate the accommodations. Thank you.
All right, I think that's all we have time for this week on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. I mean, we're not going to read all of these, are we? No, surely not. Anyway, go look on one of the podcast platforms. You'll find it there, and make sure you follow and subscribe. There's it. Email editor at santontimes.co.za if you want to get in touch or connect on the social media channels at Santon Times, and visit the website www.santontimes.co.za, and feel free to send through your questions, thoughts, comments, feedback, all those good things. Thank you to all my guests who made the time to be on the show this week. And of course, Vincenzo, goes without saying, well done. Thank you so much. And of course, the Santon Times team, as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. And they do a tremendous job. There's an entire team here in the background that does stuff that you can't even imagine to make sure that we make this happen every single week. Let's wrap up the show this week. And that's to play out with Nicky Ure, Daisy, and Loud Luxury with Sunroof. Thank you for listening. And let's do it again next week.